In the KRVS studios is Trina Tapo, whose play Thick or Thin opened at Cité des Arts last weekend and runs through this coming weekend. So, Trina, before we start talking specifically about the play, tell us how you got started writing.
A couple years ago, a friend asked me to do a small part in her stage play. It literally was one line. I've always been a writer. I've always written poetry. Just by nature, I'm a poet and I do spoken word, but I never experienced anything theater. When she asked me to do that one line, I kind of fell in love with the theater, with everything theater, just not just the writing, but the behind the scenes and being on stage. So that brief introduction kind of led to everywhere. I wrote my first script in 24 hours, handwritten in a 5-subject notebook. And it was just basically a challenge to myself to see if it was something that I could do.
You're going to have people calling you up asking to give workshops on how to write plays in 24 hours. Well, why did it come so easily to you? What was this? Was it a subject that was very important to you?
I honestly have no clue. I can't explain how I write. All I can say is I just do it. It truly is a gift that I can't tell anyone else how to do it. It's kind of like the characters just came to life, and as my pen continued to have ink in it, I continued to let it flow. And it was very challenging for me to stop it. I had to figure out a cutoff point, because I can go on and on and on. So I had to figure out a cutoff point to where I have enough meat to keep the audience engaged, but not too much to where I bore them and they become disengaged.
That is the balance. Yeah,
that was the bigger challenge for me than actually kind of spitting out that first script.
Now, the first script was not this play.
No. The first script that I ever wrote was called It's Not What It Seems. And as funny as that is, it was the first script that I wrote, but it wasn't the first thing that I directed. I actually directed another script that I wrote called Been There, Done That before I did It's Not What It Seems. So, and I did actually those two within 6 months of each other as far as for directing and staging those.
So you ended up actually staging that very first one that you wrote.
Yes, ma'am.
It came off the shelf.
It did. I had a great cast. I've had the luxury of working with a lot of great people throughout my time in theater, which is all of maybe 3 years. I mean, it's not long at all. But I've had a wonderful, wonderful actors and stage managers, and some of them have been graduates that were here in the UL theater department and just friends of the theater and things of that nature. So I've truly been blessed in that way.
So you're writing, you're directing, you're creating these productions. That takes a lot of work. Were you around someone who directed? Did it feel comfortable directing your own plays?
I've been directed before. I've also done some acting. Mm-hmm. So that's how I learned.
You'd observed it.
Yeah, I've worked under multiple directors. So I took what I saw was the good and what I saw was the bad. And I kind of made my own style from that. I took what I liked as an actor and what I didn't like as an actor. And that's what I try and give to my cast. Mm-hmm. So no one sat me down and said, this is how to do it. It really was just to figure your way through it. But I have been around some great directors that I've learned from indirectly.
Well, tell us about the subject matter of your first two plays that you mentioned. What were they about?
The first one that I directed was Been There, Done That. That one, in my opinion, was really good for a college audience, for the late teens, early 20s, mid 30s. It was about relationships, and it was really about lovers' quarrels and things of that nature. And it kind of had a male and female that mirrored one another. So there was a male who, he was a player, he didn't want to settle down, but there was a female also in that same mind frame. Then there was a female who was just really in love and wanted to be in love, but then there was a male in that same mind frame. So it played on both sides of it to show that gender doesn't make a difference in how you feel and how you approach relationships. It's really about what you do and what you've been through. The difference with that play was that some of the dialogue and all of the monologues were written in poetry, spoken word format. So it was very poetic. It was very intertwining. It was a great production. We had some sold out shows and a great cast. So that was the first one. The second one was It's Not What It Seems. And that just played off that basic old saying, never judge a book by its cover. It was about two sisters who were raised by their grandfather. One was in a relationship that on the outside it looked beautiful, it looked great, but there were some problems in the inside. The other on the outside was just trying to find herself. And while people thought she was going in one direction, she was actually going in a completely opposite direction. So it was just about really taking the time to get to know someone and really figuring out who they are without judging them just by looking and just by what you see on the surface.
Hmm. And how did the audiences react to that play?
That one sold out as well. So I was very, very lucky. It was a great show. It touched on some sensitive subjects. I kind of like to turn a mirror around on my audience as much as I can, because as human beings, we don't like to admit to our own faults. It's easy to see our faults in someone else without having to stand up and say, hey, that's me. So from both of those, I got a lot of feedback from audience members saying, hey, I learned a lot about myself, or, you know, that helped me to better deal with the situation I was going through. Just to kind of see that you're not the only person. It does happen to other people, and it's okay to admit that it happened to you.
Well, you obviously were touching chords in people, and they were responding to your plays. It sounds like not only the subject matter, but using, I guess, the style of spoken word in plays was something that they responded to also.
Yeah, I did that in the first one, and it really was a huge hit. I knew when I wrote that play, it was either people are going to like it or they're going to hate it. It was no in between, just because the way it was written. So I kind of just crossed my fingers and my eyes and my toes and everything and hoped that they liked it. And the audience really responded to it. And I was just very fortunate to have a diverse audience, from ethnicity to age range to gender. So I had a little bit of everyone in there, and they all responded to it, from, you know, the young crowd in their early 20s to the grandmother in their 70s. I had them all come in there, and they really enjoyed the poetry and the writing of it. So I was really happy that that one went over so well.
Well, that's something even mature playwrights can only dream of selling out their plays and having people respond so positively.
It's a very humbling experience, to say the least. I'm still trying to understand how to accept all of that, but it's definitely a very humbling experience. I'm just grateful that people enjoy my writing. Mm.
Now, were those two plays produced at Cité as
yes.
well?
Yes. Both of them were. I love the theater. It's very small. It's very intimate. It's a great place to really kind of see if you have what it takes. I mean, the front row and the stage meet one another. So if you can pull something off in that area and you can really get your point across and keep your audience engaged, then I think you've done a good job.
So the actors can't fake their expressions or emotions
No.
in that theater.
That theater is very unforgiving in that way, because it is so intimate. So it's a challenge not only to me as a director to make sure that I direct them in the right way, but it's a challenge to the actors as well.
I want to tell people who may be tuning in, my guest is writer Trina Tapo, whose play Through Thick and Thin opened at Cité des Arts last weekend and
yes,
will
ma'am.
Run this coming weekend as
yes,
well.
Ma'am.
So is this your third play, or were there some others in between the first two we just talked about?
No, this is the third one. Mm-hmm. Actually, it's the fourth run. Been there, done that, sold out the first run. We were asked to do an encore, so we ran that one twice. Mm-hmm. So it is the third production, and I'm just hoping to sell this one out like I did the other two.
Well, tell us about the play, the story of the play.
You know, it's about relationships, but not just the lover side of relationships. When you date someone, you really date everything in their life, including their family and their jobs and their friends. So this play kind of explores all of those relationships between parents and children, between siblings, between friends. It goes into everything, and how the lack of communication or miscommunication can really make things hazy. So it basically explores all those different relationships, but how they intertwine and how one person, you're affected by so many things in your life.
You're kind of fearless in wading into that whole arena of relationships, Trina.
You know, it's everyday life. I mean, it's what we deal with. And for me, there's two type of theater. There's a theater that takes you away from everyday life and it gives you that fantasy that you're looking for. Mm-hmm. And then there's a theater that kind of say, this is what you deal with and this is what you can relate to. When I write, I tend to lean toward what's relatable. You know, I definitely want the audience to feel comfortable watching it, but I want you to take something away from it without me shoving a message down your throat.
Yeah, well, you're taking things that we all feel and experience but may not know how to express to ourselves, even in the same way that you're helping to express it and mirror it to us.
And it can be difficult. It really can be difficult for everyone to articulate how they feel and to really make that point across without stepping on someone else's toes or without hurting someone else's feelings. So I kind of like to play on the edge a little bit and see how far I can go before I just fall over the cliff.
Again, when I said fearless, who are the characters in Through Thick and Thin?
It's a cast of 8. The characters, it's a mother and a father, Lynette and Quincy Patterson. They've been married for about 25 years, so they really know one another well. They have a set of twins, Lise and Lance, 21 years old, brand new to dating, think they know everything in the world. Each of the twins have a mate. Lisa is dating a guy named Jason, who her mother and father and brother and everyone in her life hates. And Lance is dating a woman named Evie, who his mother hates, but his father loves. So that's the tricky part. And then there is Jason, the boyfriend, Evie, and then Damon, who is a friend of Jason. And Damon is kind of that character that he's been where Jason is, but doesn't really want to go there anymore. So he's trying to help Jason pull him over to the good side. And it gets hectic and hazy at times.
Sounds like you're really exploring all the complexities of family and dating in this play. Again, Through Thick and Thin, you have an opportunity to see it this weekend. It ran last weekend at Cité.
Yes, ma'am.
And there are 3 performances this coming weekend, yes. Friday, Saturday, and Sunday?
Yes, Friday and Saturday. The show is at 7:30, and then Sunday is a matinee at 2 p.m.
Mm-hmm. And what were some of the reactions that you heard after people saw it this past weekend?
They want more. Apparently, I'm going to have to write a part two. That was one thing everyone wanted to know. Okay, what comes next? You know, like, okay, we have this, then what's next? And a lot of people, they really enjoyed it. I had a couple people come back for a second round, so that was really good. When if you came Friday night and you came back Saturday, that was a really humbling feeling to know, okay, you've seen it, you know what happens, and you want to see it again. A lot of people have expressed the way the writing, I've gotten a lot of compliments on how well it's written, which for me, I just write it. I don't know how it does, but so far I've had all positive comments. I haven't had one person walk out and just, you know, I don't like it, or kind of walk away. A lot of the audience members seek out the actors and they seek me out to give their opinion of it. And it's all been very, very positive. So I am grateful for that.
Mm-hmm. Well, tell us who the actors are in the play.
Oh, I have a couple of first-time actors, very new to the stage. It's Caleb Strickney and Asia Valier. They're both, this is their first time in theater, first time on the stage, and they're doing a great job. Dion Leray plays Lynette Patterson. Joshua Broussard plays Jason. Jasper Falk plays Damon. Devin Chasson plays Evie, and Lance is played by Jacoby Portier.
All right, so quite a cast and an interesting mix of ingenues and experienced actors.
Yes, very much so. So, but they're all, if you look at them, you wouldn't know who was the first timer and who wasn't the first timer. The cast gel together so well. They work on their own. My typical calendar is an 8-week rehearsal calendar, 3 days a week, 2 hours a day. That's it. We don't rehearse on holidays, weekends, Fridays, or Mondays. It's Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. So basically, in no more than 48 hours, if you put all the hours together, they've learned this entire show.
Well, that speaks a lot to the quality of your directing as well as to your writing.
Well, thank you.
That they can pick it up so quickly from how you've written it and what you ask them to do on stage. Do you have a website where people can go for more information about your plays or your writing?
You can go to the Cité website, www.citedesart.org, or I have a Facebook page. It's Category 5 Presents a Trina Tapo. If you just put in Category 5, it'll come up in the flyer. Is the profile picture.
All right. And as with all Cité performances, you can get tickets by calling Cité or going to their website.
Yes, ma'am. If you call 337-291-1122, you can make a reservation, or you can go to the website and buy tickets there.
All right. Well, thank you, Trina, for coming by to tell us more about the play. Writer Trina Tapo is with us today, and she wrote Through Thick or Thin,
yes,
which
ma'am.
Opened last weekend at Cité and runs for this weekend as well. Thank you.
Well, thank you for having me.
joining me by telephone is Mickey Edwards, who will be giving a talk in Lafayette as part of the Independent Lecture Series. He'll be in Lafayette on December 19th at the Cajun Dome Convention Center. Mickey Edwards was a congressman for 16 years, has taught at Harvard and also at Princeton, and the has been a commentator for a number of stations as well as a journalist. And you've actually been a commentator on NPR's All Things Considered as well.
Yeah, that's right. I had a regular commentary on All Things Considered. I loved it.
Yeah, so our listeners are quite familiar with you. Well, I've just given a sketch of your background, but maybe you can tell us a bit about your background that led up to the book that has just been published that you'll actually be addressing for the lecture. And the title of that book is The Parties Versus the People, How to Turn Republicans and Democrats into Americans. What is it about your education, your background, that has led you to writing that book?
You know, actually, it wasn't my education at all. I take that back. It was the education I received from my constituents.
Mm-hmm.
Because when I was in Congress, I used to regularly have meetings with my constituents in Oklahoma. And at one of them, I was asked why I had not done something. I don't even remember what it was. But, you know, my answer was essentially that I'm a Republican. At that time, the Democrats were in control of the House. And I said, well, the other party controls the House, and they won't let us do this. And so I tried to do this, and the Democrats wouldn't let me do that. And somebody got up and said, I am so sick and tired of hearing Democrat this, Republican that. Everybody in the room stood up and cheered, and I never did it again. And I began to observe that there was this real disconnect between what was happening in Washington, where it was a constant battle between people because of whatever party label they wore, and the people back home who just wanted a government where people sat down together as Americans and solved problems. And as I went on over time, the only thing that happened when I went to Harvard to teach and to Princeton was to have some time to be able to observe and reflect in a way that you can't do when you're right in the middle of the business of legislating, and observe how so many times major issues broke down to Republicans all on one side, Democrats all on the other side, which I thought, you know, how could that possibly work? Both, you know, there's such diversity in background and age and geography. How is it that all Republicans seem to think alike and all Democrats seem to think alike? And so that's when I began to think more seriously about what it was in our political system that was causing that to happen.
And what did you teach at Harvard and Princeton?
Well, I taught I taught what I knew, basically. I taught mm-hmm. Congress. I taught government.
Mm-hmm.
And I taught about, you know, how citizens can bring about change, you know, which is something that has happened many times in our country.
Mm-hmm.
But it was basically about our political system mm-hmm. and how it worked and how the founders envisioned it, you know, mm-hmm. what they envisioned in the constitutional system. And it became more and more obvious that we have really gotten away from that. And in fact, if you study early American history, all four of our first four presidents said, don't create political parties. You know, they had some parties, but they weren't like they are now. You know, Washington, Adams, Jefferson, and Madison kept saying, don't create political parties. Well, we not only created them, but we've given them enormous power over our political system. And that seems to be, you know, what has driven this division to the point of being unable to come together on almost anything.
Hmm. Well, did you find as you were teaching, were your students very helpful in helping you to refine your thoughts, the questions, you know, that sometimes out of the mouths of babes and young students?
Well, of course, you know, I was teaching graduate students.
Mm-hmm. not
they
freshmen.
They weren't really babes.
They weren't freshmen.
Right. But what I did find was when I started talking about the fact that it doesn't have to be that way, people were shocked because, you know, you grow up with a certain system. That's what you're used to, and that's what you think is just how things are. And most of the time this is true probably in the radio business, or it's true in, you know, anything that you do in life.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the way things are is just sort of the way you accept that they're supposed to be, and you don't think about it.
Right. Certain traditions harden, and then it's difficult to go back.
They do. And I found, some of my students, when I would describe this dysfunction, I'd say, you don't know, for example, the Speaker of the House doesn't even need to be a member of Congress. And in some countries, the Speaker of the Parliament, the House, is not a partisan. Mm-hmm. But we have a system here where everything is partisan. The leaders of our legislative branch function as party leaders as opposed to leaders of the legislative system. Mm-hmm. And so I would get the feedback from my students who just, it doesn't have to be that way. And I started drilling down farther and farther into, what we could change so that it worked better.
Mm. Well, I want to remind our listeners, if they're just tuning in right now, that my guest is Mickey Edwards, who was a congressman for 16 years. He's now vice president of the Aspen Institute and director of the Constitution Project. And we'll be in Lafayette on December 19th giving a talk for the Independent Lecture Series. And that will be on the 19th at noon at the Cajun Dome Convention Center. He's just published his book, The Parties Versus the People, How to Turn Republicans and Democrats into Americans. And we'll be addressing that book. And I assume questions from the audience. So there's a lot of history in this book, kind of taking us through the history of American political parties.
Well, there's some of that. Mm-hmm. For example, the way that the early political parties were formed around three or four or five issues, but they weren't over everything. They didn't have control over who got to sit in Congress, who had access to the ballot. They didn't have that kind of power then. But it's also... the way that allowing parties to draw congressional district lines totally upends the system that the founders envisioned. So I'm going to be going through some of that, and I'm going to be looking at what the consequences are, because what we have is a system today where the people who serve in Congress and sometimes in state legislatures aren't really representative of the community that they're from. Mm-hmm. They are more representative of what some small segment of that population wants, and that's why when I talk about how to turn Republicans and Democrats into Americans, I don't mean that they're not loyal Americans. They are. They love this country, but the system that we have created causes them to function primarily as Republicans or as Democrats or as Republicans against Democrats and Democrats against Republicans, rather than all of us sitting down as neighbors together to work out our problems.
Some people might think of that as a utopian ideal.
Well, it's what democracy is. When you have, as many people say, and they're right, and I know it, we're a republic, in that power is limited, it's divided, and so forth. Mm-hmm. But we're also a democracy in the sense that we as the people are supposed to be able to choose the people who represent us. Mm-hmm. To make the laws. Mm-hmm. And what's working now is that the people who get elected don't necessarily represent all the people in Louisiana or all the people in a particular Louisiana congressional district want, but, smaller groups. Now, Louisiana is not a good example because, in fact, Louisiana has done more to reform its own system over the years than a lot of other states have done. But you have states where very small percentages of the population, can determine who can be on the ballot for the voters to choose between.
Hmm. Well, in addition to looking at the history of political parties in the United States and talking about what is, you do offer some solutions in your book, and I assume you'll be talking about those during the lecture. And I don't want you to give them all away, but maybe just one that really is kind of close to your heart that you offer in the book.
Well, I mean, one of the reforms, I'll just skip to one. There are a lot of major reforms about how you elect people, and I'm going to get into a number of those. But just as one example about when you serve in a legislative body, in order to get appointed to a committee, and in a state legislature or in Congress, the committee you're on has an awful lot to say about how the process unfolds, what will be considered, what ultimately will become law. And at least in Congress, you get put on a committee by your party leaders. And you do it usually in exchange for a promise that I know these are the party positions on these five issues, and I'm going to be true to the party. I'm going to stick to the party position. And it shouldn't be that way. There's no reason why your serving on a committee should be based on what serves the advantages of one of the political clubs.
Strategy.
Right.
Again, I want to tell people, Mickey Edwards, a former congressman and also now the vice president of the Aspen Institute and a commentator on NPR's All Things Considered. We've heard him over the years. He will be in Lafayette on December 19th for the Independent Lecture Series. On the 19th at the Cajun Dome Convention Center, the luncheon starts at noon, and I believe tickets are available by calling the Independent right now. He'll be talking about some of the ideas he's just been addressing that are in his book, The Parties Versus the People, How to Turn Republicans and Democrats into Americans. And was that published by Yale?
Yale University Press.
All right. I'm sure people can find that. And I believe there will be copies at the lecture on the 19th, and I'm sure you'll be happy to sign them on that day as well. Well, thank you so much for taking the time. I know you're very busy. Again, Mickey Edwards joining us from Washington by telephone. We appreciate that. He will be in Lafayette again on December 19th for the Independent Lecture Series. Mickey, thank you so much for taking
you.
The time, and we appreciate your thoughts and insight.
Great. I can't wait to get down there. Thanks. Bye.
Joining me in the KRVS studios as the sounds of Ravi Shankar fade away are Sunny Landreth and Mariusz Smoly, conductor of the Acadiana Symphony Orchestra, here to talk about the annual Louisiana Christmas concert that the ASO puts on. Sunny Landreth is the guest artist along with his band this year. And it is an encore performance. You've performed with the symphony before, Sunny.
Yeah, we were talking about that, and it's great to get the opportunity again, and especially this will be the first time with my band. band, and so we'll have Dave Ranson on bass and Brian Brignac on drums.
All right. I know a lot of people will be looking forward to the full band, many who remember having heard you with the symphony before. What was that experience like? I think that was maybe 3 or 4 years ago that you performed.
Well, we did. Actually, Manish, I think it was the benefit we did a few years ago, but maybe 7 years ago we did the Christmas Christmas program. And it was great for me because it helped push me into new areas for the slide guitar, which honestly was part of what inspired me to do the new album, which is all instrumental, but to include the strings and the orchestral arrangements with that as well.
So you liked that sound behind
the
way your guitar sounded with
it. Yeah, I love it. Yeah, I'm hooked.
All right, no going back. So you've started something new, and maybe slide guitarists all over the world will hear this album and think, Sonny does it? I think that sounds pretty good.
And play with the orchestra. That's right. That's right.
Well, so this inspired you, and you began working on songs that could be played in connection with the orchestra. How did you all start on that? Mariusz, you got Mariusz involved in the project. How did you start thinking about writing songs once you thought you might want to include that element?
I think a lot of it, too, for me, goes back to when I began. My first instrument was actually trumpet, so I played through grade school and high school and my years in college, all two of them. But that was I took music, and that was all, throughout that time, having that influence of both classical music and jazz. But I'd fallen in love with the sound a long time ago, way back then.
And performing with a large ensemble with different instruments.
Yeah, sure. And that informs you as well. Mm-hmm. So then you go, well, how do you take those influences and then turn that around with for slide guitar for me? And really the significance of that was leaning on the vocal quality that you get with slide and approaching the arrangements like that, because actually I didn't want it to be just background parts. Mm-hmm. And I should mention Sam Broussard did all the string arrangements, and he and I worked on those together. But we wanted to be another voice on the project, and that's why it's so prominent on the songs that they played on.
And just a moment, going back to the trumpet, I remember hearing you years ago say that that also informed your sense of breath and how you played the guitar.
Right.
That there was something about that experience of using your breath with the trumpet that somehow found its way into your guitar playing.
Yeah, I think it helped me to take a different approach, or just a different mindset, because you do have to take a breath with the phrasing, and that changed that for me on guitar.
Mm-hmm. Well, and now before some of our audience thinks, Sonny Landreth, orchestra, violins. We were talking just before we went on the air about that long tradition of groups, rock groups, the Beatles, using strings in the background to complement and fill out. And Mariusz, you were saying that you listened very early on to the Beatles and you were aware of that happening.
I think this is a very natural process for every musician. You start with your own instrument, with your own voice, and you try to explore it as much as you can, but sooner or later you hit a wall. I need to decide, well, what I'm going to do. I'm going to go to a larger group. I'm going to explore other styles, other instruments. I think it's a natural process. The Beatles did it. Another famous group like Deep Purple or Queens did it. So it's a wonderful growing process as a musician, as an artist. And I think when you have an opportunity to widen your horizons and work with musicians from other styles, it's a growing process. It's a learning process. I had a lot of fun, respect for other musicians, such as, you know, Sonny is a fantastic musician and guitar player. So for me, it was a learning process to do something with him and see the music from his point of view.
Mm-hmm.
So,
well, and Sonny, even though you hadn't considered up until now working that way yourself, in listening to bands over the years, what had you thought about the quality that strings and orchestral arrangements added to groups that you admire?
Well, I think it makes a much more complex and interesting sound. And Mariusz, he's right on. I mean, after a while, you want to push the boundaries and you want to explore other aspects of music. And that's one thing I learned early on, to listen to everything, anything that's done well, and to learn from it. And you want to keep the radar going the whole time, because that's a big part of creativity. And you, you do keep pushing that, and I always learn something. That's what I like, especially when I hang out with Maestro here. I always learn something. And it, and I was telling you earlier, at 61, that's a good thing when you keep coming up with new ideas. But I really, honestly, I think that that makes for a much more interesting sound. And in particular, when you're making an instrumental album, and it was my first to do that, you need a lot of melody, a lot of content, and I wanted to go deeper with all that, and that was really important to get that across, and that's why I wanted to do the concert, was since we may have this collaboration to have a performance here for our community and, mm-hmm. and the folks here at home.
Mm-hmm. If you are tuning in, we're talking with Sonny Landreth and Mariusz Smoly, conductor and artistic director of the Acadiana Symphony Orchestra. They're talking about a collaboration for this year's Christmas concert, Louisiana Christmas, with Sonny and his band and the Acadiana Symphony Orchestra. You will be playing some of the pieces from this new album on Thursday evening. Which mm-hmm. pieces will you perform?
So we're playing four of the tracks that are on the album. Wonder Ride, Brave New Girl, For You and Forever, which I actually had a version that we did way back when, but it's given me 7 years to have better ideas and make it a better song. And what else am I missing? And then there's one of my favorites is Opening Sky, and it's very orchestral, and it has, I like the drama, and it has a big lift to it, and much of it too is for theme music, and you think in terms of even for movies and that, and what really propels the moment in a scene, and that imagery is real important to me as well. And there's one other song, Uberesso, that we've done before, and this will be the first time with the guys that I work with and the orchestra too. Mm.
Well, you mentioned that thinking of movie soundtracks and imagery. How much did that really inform your writing? Because you're so known for your lyrics as well. People love your lyrics.
Bless you for saying that, dear. Thank you so much.
They do. And, of course, they're so full of imagery as well. But when you're trying to translate that into pure sound, how did you
go
about doing
that? Well, that's a good question. And that goes back to my early influences with instrumental music, with Chet Atkins, the great, all the jazz greats, and Wes Montgomery, and then the Ventures. I was really big into that when I was a kid. But a lot of that is hitting on the same thing, and that's why I wanted to draw on some of those influences. Mm-hmm. And it does conjure up, I think, more imagery, and that's always fascinated me, to come up with a theme that can do that.
Mm-hmm. And you found that the strings and the orchestral work helped to fill out some of those.
Oh, absolutely. I just opened it up. I just mm-hmm. it took it to a whole nother level. Mm-hmm. That's the part I'm hooked on.
All right. Well, we all get a chance to hear that with the full orchestra. And, of course, your album. When did your album come out?
Back in May.
Okay.
I still consider that new for me.
It's still the same year. We haven't reached the new year yet. So people get a chance to see the performance of pieces on that album. And Mariusz, I know over the years I've heard you talk about having been in a band. Chris, you studied the violin and classical music, but you always had a place in your heart for pop music and rock music as well.
Well, as a child, I was trying to listen to absolutely everything I could mm-hmm. get my hands on. My choices were limited. Now, I was growing up in a communist Poland, where getting an LP from Wes was a huge achievement. So somebody mm-hmm. in the school got an LP, and 3 weeks later, everybody had it copied onto reel-to-reel, and we were all listening to the same LP for a week, until somebody else brought another LP. But it was wonderful, because I was sort of experiencing those different pop artists, jazz artists, in a wonderful musical community. Everybody was listening to the same for a week, and we discussed it, and we played it, we liked it, we hated it. And I was trying to play some jazz piano when I was in high school, and I was a big fan of the Beatles from the very first time I heard them. And actually, I learned English by studying their lyrics. That's how I learned English. By going
Leonard
Rigby, you know, and Yesterday. I had no idea what it was all about. I was just learning, you know, how to
you're
sing
gonna
it.
You start listening for those phrases when you talk.
And so I the high school, also playing the rock band. I play keyboards and a little bit of guitar. And again, I was always open for everything, from medieval song to the, you know, I remember once Chick Corea came to Poland. He was still young, and he came with Gary Barton, who played mm-hmm. Viper. For me, it was absolute superb experience hearing that type of music for the first time. And I keep trying to do the same in the real world of classical music, listening to as many performers, orchestras, conductors, and in any of the other kinds of music. My daughter suddenly got in love with musical from Broadway, and I'm learning through her all those great old, you know, Broadway musicals. So it's a never-ending process. It's a wonderful, wonderful experience.
Well, that's what's so wonderful with the two of you being so open to music and all kinds of music. And it sounds like this was a really happy meeting between similar musical souls with the two of you, although growing up in very different places. Mm-hmm. So how exactly on the album did the, how many strings are involved in the recording?
Well, we start out basically as a chamber group, but with four players, mm-hmm. and then we would build on that. If we wanted to keep it strictly as a string quartet, like on one track in particular, we could do that. We had the flexibility, and then we could overdub the parts to make it bigger and put in a more orchestral sound. And that's where the fun on the engineering part of it with Tony Daigle and him have been working together for a long time, and so we kind of mapped this out, and I think for us too to expand on that, it gave us more options, and so it, depending on the track, depending on the song, how we would treat it.
Mm-hmm. You made it more complex, layered it with more sounds.
Oh, yeah, mm-hmm. yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, on Thursday, how will that work? Are you going to have a quartet with it, or are you going to layer it for the different songs that you perform?
Well, actually, we have, a lot of the players are involved with it, so Mariusz can tell you more.
Yeah, the string section is about 40, and they will be playing all the time. So we're in a different world. Instead of using the technology to
create those layers.
Create a different layers. You need to use your ear and instinct and on the spot trying to see how important or how strong or how delicate certain sections should be. There's not much time at the rehearsals to do that, but, you know, you go with your instinct, and live performance, I think, has a little bit different goal than produced recording at the studio. Mm-hmm. But I think it'd be fun for the audience to see actually the entire string section, and in one song, this entire orchestra playing behind the trio. I think just the physical experience of feeling the sound coming live from so many people on stage is something special in itself.
Mm-hmm. That's what I was going to say, that feeling the power of those strings behind.
Yeah, there's nothing like that. Mm-hmm. You really can't. The world of recording is one thing, much of the time, and the world of playing live is something else, and it's great when the two can meet somewhat in between, but for me, some of those songs seem to just develop a life of their own anyway, and some I'll leave alone because they worked out well in the production of it in the studio. So it's going to be great. I always wanted these songs to get played live, and we've actually been out doing these as a trio, some of them. And two of them we haven't, and wish that we had been, but now we are going to be in the heat of the moment, which I think is good, too.
You know, you'll be carried along in those waves of sound coming from behind you.
Yeah, I'll need all the help I get.
We just need to stay together.
That's right. You won't be stumbling. Well, you know, when you were describing that, Mariusz, I thought, well, really, a conductor is an audio engineer, just live. Well, you don't get to go back and, like, say, no, take two.
No, I mean, it's you actually... You feel you're the creative director, I think, when you have, you know, in maybe 16 players chamber orchestra and maybe 300 players or singers on stage. You basically, on the spot, you make those decisions about, you know, some of the very basic elements of performance, like a tempo. But sometimes the very intimate, small elements, like, you know, the second oboe less, the first oboe more, and suddenly the color changes. Mm. You know, it was blue, now it's green. It's a fascinating process. And you can only expect the unexpected because, you know, the instrument that the conductor is playing, quote-unquote, is a group of human beings. And, you know, everybody has a good day, bad day, it's a different mood. Mm-hmm. It's not like, mm-hmm. you know, you pretty much know what your guitar is going to do unless, you know, something happens with, you know, string breaks or...
Right. You don't want that happening, but more or less,
but it's pretty a dependable instrument. You 90%, you know, what's going to give you depending on how you perform. With the orchestra, I think there's much bigger room for, you know, mistake, maneuver, and just need to respond to what's in front of you. It's almost like I had a friend who is a very experienced sailor, and he says when he sails out, even though he's sailing now for 50 years, he never knows what to expect from the sea. Mm. Even though he knows where it's north, where it's south, he's all the GPS, but it's always a new experience. And it's kind of like, you know, going on a journey with the orchestra. You know where you're going, you know the basic parameters, but there are a lot of things in the process that are very new and exciting.
Well, and I think one of the things that your audience, too, Sonny, appreciates so much is that intense responsiveness. I mean, you can see it on stage. This is not rote to you when you respond to your guitar, the music, or the audience. And I think they really feel that from you. And so this will be just a lovely, live, intimate performance with everyone feeling all the different colors and emotions that are possible with this wonderful collaboration.
Yeah, I'm really excited about it and looking forward to it.
Well, I want to tell people that's this Thursday, and if you're interested in what you're hearing, you get to hear it this Thursday. It is Louisiana Christmas, the Acadiana Symphony Orchestra's annual Christmas concert. They are joined this year by Sonny Landreth and his band, and it will feature songs that are on Sonny's new album, which were inspired in large part by working with the orchestra, with Mariusz and the string performers in this orchestra. So the songs that you'll be playing, is there one that you particularly have a great affection for?
It's kind of a tough call, but if I had to pick one, it would be Brave New Girl.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And why do you like that one?
Well, that was one I wasn't really sure we were going to do, put strings on it, but the more I listened to it, I thought, oh, we have to. That was... Actually, I think the last one we worked on, and man, am I glad we did, because it turned out to be really pretty much my favorite piece. And I think, too, a lot of what Mariusz was talking about, that comes out in this piece for me. And a lot of that, I feel like we nailed it in a way that just fit that track really well.
Mm-hmm. So we get to hear that on Thursday. In addition to Sonny and his band and the wonderful songs that we'll get to hear from that album on Thursday, what else is going to be happening that night? There's going to be a lot going on.
Well, we are bringing on stage a children chorus. We started this initiative a few years ago called Acadiana Sings, with the exclamation mark, trying to get as many children at every level, elementary school, middle school, and high school, to participate in music through singing, which is the most immediate, natural way for people to make music. And we slowly keep building this program to be bigger and bigger. And this year we're going to have about 175 elementary school children singing some of the popular Christmas songs and some not so popular Christmas songs, but all of them in a very festive spirit. It'll be a great experience, I think, both for the audience and for the performers. There's something different from singing to your parents at home or being on the stage with a big orchestra and singing to audience 1,000+. And I think that does something to the children that is very positive in terms of their interests and their ambitions and teamwork and being part of something bigger and very exciting. So I'm very happy that we continue that and we're building that program.
Well, as Sonny was saying earlier, just his early experiences with bands and performances like that really do mark you
absolutely.
And inspire you.
Yeah. I have some letters at home from my previous years of children or entire classrooms writing and saying how much they appreciate it. It was a boy who decided to major in music, you know, a few years back because he went to orchestra concert or participated in choir. Those are very meaningful experiences in addition of just participating in a wonderful musical holiday tradition.
Right. And also for those students whose families bring them to this performance to hear the children performing, what an incredible experience for them to see children their age
absolutely.
Performing on stage. Again, we're talking about Louisiana Christmas along with the children's chorus Acadiana Sings with the Acadiana Symphony Orchestra and Sonny Landreth, all happening this Thursday. Extravagant, exuberant Christmas concert that will take place. I know I've seen a few photographs of you with school children on Facebook that the ASO has posted, and they look ecstatic and really excited to be a part of this performance. So thank you so much for creating these experiences for all of us. You've been doing that ever since you were here, trying to collaborate with Louisiana musicians and really make it very personal to all of us and reflect our music back to us and yet add something else to it.
You know,
as well.
In many ways, Louisiana is a musician's heaven. You know, so many wonderful talents, so many great traditions. So I feel privileged and honored to be here and work with all those wonderful people.
Paradis
de Louisiana. Yeah, and we're very fortunate to have him here and to... these collaborations, and he's brought a lot of the musicians in the area, and I think for our community that's a great thing.
All right, and again, brought you to another level you might not have, Sonny. Orchestral music and strings on Sonny's new album that came out in May. Mm-hmm. You'll get to hear some selections from that album live on stage with the full orchestra.
And you can purchase those CDs during the tour.
Right.
Maybe Sonny will sign some of them.
That's right, he'll be there as well. And how do people get tickets for this fabulous
concert? You can go to our website, acadianasymphony.org. You can go to Ticketmaster website, or you can purchase them at the box office at Hyman. All the good tickets are almost gone, so we're going to have good seats. Act quickly, please. And I'm sure some tickets will be available at the door tomorrow night at 7:30.
All right. Well, find out how to get tickets. Go to the ASO website. Thank you both for coming by. Sonny Landreth, Mariusz Smoly, conductor and artistic director of the Acadiana Symphony Orchestra, performing together for Louisiana Christmas this Thursday at the Hyman Center. Thank you both.
Thank you.
What's happening in the arts and culture in South Louisiana. Opening tonight at Theater 810, the play We All Do, written by Jaron Schecksnyder, produced by Wanderlust Theater Company. The play will run Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday evenings at 8 o'clock at Theater 810 and on Sunday at 3 o'clock. Tickets are available through Theater 810 by calling them or going to the We All Do Eventbrite site, wealldoeventbrite.com. Opening tomorrow, the 10 10th annual holiday pottery sale through UL Lafayette's Visual Arts Ceramics area. The opening and preview evening is Thursday from 7 to 10 p.m., on Friday the 14th from 10 to 6 p.m., and on Saturday from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. as well. That's the 10th annual holiday pottery sale featuring pieces by the students and faculty of UL's Visual Arts Ceramics area. Itinerant Theater in Lake Charles initiates its staged reading series, the plays The Thing. It begins this Thursday, the 13th, 7 o'clock. The first play to be staged and read is the comedy Candida. The play will be staged and read at the Attic Theater in Central School's Arts and Humanities Center. That's on Kirby Street in Lake Charles. 7 o'clock on Thursday. Tickets will be available at the door, or you can go to the Itinerant Theater website. There will be a master acting workshop at Cité des Arts this Thursday through Monday with Caroline McGee, who is an NYU professor. For more information about the master acting workshop, please call Cité des Arts. The Performing Arts Society of Acadiana presents Cirque Chinois, the National Circus of the People's Republic of China, Friday, 7:30 at the Hyman Center. For more information or tickets, you can visit the PASA website. The UL Press has their second holiday book sale coming up this Saturday. A lot of their new titles and back titles will be available for this book signing at Casa Azul in Grand Coteau, Saturday from noon until 3. For more information about the UL Press, you can go to their website, ulpress.org. This Saturday at Vermilionville, Old Time Christmas Celebration will take place from 10 a.m. until 4 p.m. Tickets will be available at the gate. And the Pandemonium Theater Group presents The Life and Adventures of Santa Claus by Pat Cook, based on a book by L. Frank Baum. Friday and Saturday at 7 o'clock and Sunday at 2 at the Grand Opera House of the South. And for a listing of programs on KRVS, please stop by our website, krvs.org, clicking on the schedule button and downloading a weekly schedule, or you can podcast many of our locally produced programs. Stay tuned to KRVS this afternoon and evening. We're with NPR's All Things Considered from 4 until 6. From 6 to 7, Terry Gross.